Tryon, a futuristic fable of parrots, pandemics, and promise makers.
Prologue. South Island, New Zealand, sometime in the not-too-distant future. Aria looked down from Author's Pass and breathed out a frigid sigh. She wasn't going to make it before dark closed around her. The sun had disappeared over the highest peaks an hour ago, but she had thought she could make it to the road. She'd pushed herself to exhaustion, but didn't seem to make much headway. Normally, it wouldn't be a problem to camp out alone in the mountains since there weren't any dangerous animals on South Island. But it felt like someone was following her, and that's why she had nearly run in the places she could. Every time she looked over her shoulder, though, all she saw was one or two kias, the large alpine parrots she always enjoyed. She recognized one with a band on her right leg who had been released from the Kea Foundation for Conservation, also known as KFC. Aria worked there as a part-time veterinarian using her mobile veterinary clinic for field work and house calls. The other Kea wasn't banded and was a stranger to her. Both followed her, but they often did that out of curiosity. The worst that they might do is run off with some of her food or camping equipment if she didn't keep an eye on them. She knew from her research with captive Kias how smart they were. Right now, she wasn't thinking much about these smart, beautiful birds she had dedicated her life to. Though these parrots and the sparkling snow-capped mountains and the meadows full of golden buttercups had been breathtaking, their beauty had not dispelled her growing sense of malevolence. She was in danger and couldn't escape what was coming for her. She told herself not to be silly, that she'd watched too many zombie films. Or maybe it was that documentary about how decades earlier COVID-19 had blown through the world. She'd been just a kid, but the documentary had brought back a memory of shopping with her mother the night before the lockdown. The store was packed with long lines, anxious people, panic buying food, guns, and ammunition. The crowds had started forming the day before the month-long lockdown. Holding her mother's hand, they were jostled roughly by two burly men trying to push in front of them to the gun counter. "No way, Jose," her mother said and elbowed them back, not yielding any space. Her mom had grown up in Honduras when it had the highest murder rate in the world, and she knew how to take care of herself. She also knew about guns, having married the descendant of a Maori sheep rancher, and she had been an accomplished hunter in her youth. They met when he arrived in her Miskito indigenous village in Honduras to work on the community clinic. Her mother placed her body between the glaring men and the gun counter and growled, "I'll take those two boxes of 20-gauge shells." The last two. Quickly paying cash so they could leave, her mom nearly jerked Aria's arm out of its socket to leave the store. Looking over her shoulder, Aria saw hatred mixed with violent intent seething from the urban bullies following them to the parking lot. "Hey, honey, did you get the ammo?" her father called as he walked up with his arms full of grocery bags to get them through the quarantine. One look at Mom's face stopped him in his tracks. He looked behind her at the rapidly approaching men and dropped the bags, making the kumara potatoes spill with thudding sounds. Her dad yelled, "Hey, what's the problem here?" The men stopped, but didn't back away. They watched the family gather the kumara, leaving the few that rolled near the men's feet. "Let them have them," her mom said as they jumped in the car and she sped out of the parking lot, one hand on the wheel and the other on Aria's shoulder in a comforting squeeze. "Don't look back, Aria, just look forward." All the way home, though, it felt like they were still coming after them, stalking them to steal what was theirs. She had felt pursued throughout the coronavirus epidemic, and it took years for the fear to fade. And it had, until now. She couldn't help looking over her shoulder. Where there had been two Kias, there were now five. They don't usually congregate in the dark, unless... She had read stories about Kias attacking sheep at night. Sumkia's 8 sheep alive. She told herself she must be near their nests or roost, and they were saying goodnight.
Hey guys, is there a problem? I don't want to bother you, but I have to spend the night here.
She said this aloud, as much to give herself company as to see the Kia's response. Her words were received as an invitation, and they walked towards her. Often, choosing not to fly, she thought they looked as silly walking as penguins did. She pulled out her camp stove to boil water for supper. Now 10 Kias were only a few meters away, staring. Even that close, their brown plumage turned black under the moonless sky. Incoming clouds hid the stars. Her hands shook as she tried to light the stove. Finally, it ignited, and she saw 20 Kias, some perched on her pack. It was more Kias than she'd ever seen flocking together this close to humans.
Hungry?
She pulled out a bag of pasta and kumara and threw 2 potatoes out of the radius of light for them, hoping the Kias would sound the alarm if someone was following her. The flock hopped over to inspect the potatoes, some flapping their wings and exposing the bright burst of blood red under their wings.
You sure are beautiful, if spooky birds, big guy.
The Kia, atop her pack, glared at her with intelligence and intention, then unzipped her mane pouch with his beak, and out poured chocolate and nuts. She shooed him away, but he nipped her hand, refusing to leave.
Ouch, you little bugger!
Kias often bit the tourists that fed them at ski resorts, and Arya felt it served them right for illegally feeding wildlife, but she was offended. She, like anyone who worked in parrot conservation, had rightfully earned her scars, a testament to the truth of her resume.
You're the biggest Kia I've ever seen. You have one hell of a bite.
The Kia rifled through her pack. She sucked the wound to keep the blood from dripping on her clothes or in the boiling water. When a few drops exploded on the pure white snow, the other Kias turned their heads, abandoned the potatoes, and waddled into the light. They had multiplied to 50 Kias.
Glad you're here to protect me, and I'm so much bigger than you.
As if challenged, the large Kia hopped off her pack and walked to the boiling pot. More curious about than afraid of the intelligent and fearless Kias, she watched the Kia walk around the stove and then go back to her pack and pull out her bandana. He walked back to the stove and shrilled twice, "Kirk! Kirkka!" There was an explosion of red, this time of Kia wing feathers as a cloud of parrots flew toward her.
Are you thirsty?
She backed away. So many parrots were in the air that she couldn't see 3 Kias grab the bandana in their beaks, drop it over the pot's handle that they then bit, and fly with the pot toward her. She was batting away the other Kias, who were no match for her. She glanced up at a movement overhead just as the Kias dropped the pot of boiling water on her face. She fell screaming, grabbed fists of snow that she rubbed on her face. Her eyes tightly crumpled in pain. The Kias dragged the stove to her and tilted the flames toward her parka. On fire, she thrashed and rolled to the cliff's edge. She hung on the blade of cliff over the abyss she knew was below. Grasping and grunting for a handhold, her Kia-pecked fists filled with brown and blood-red feathers as she fell. The dark flock swirled over her all the way down, calling, "Kra! Kriya!" until her body landed, broken. When the last of her clothes burned away, the big Kia chortled to the flock, and with a rush of raised wings, her body had a new covering of feathered bodies. The Kia's dexterous feet and sharp beaks exquisitely evolved for the task beneath them.